Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. A lot has happened since we've been able to do a pod, so we've got a packed one for you. The schedule release, a big trade, and rookie minicamp. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. What's up, Chud?
Scott, how are you? Good to be with you after a little bit of a break. It's kind of like we broken record, but you know, I mean, you can always just talk Browns, right? There's always something going on. And as you just mentioned, that's what's happening right now. So I think we saved the schedule for the end. And let's just get in and start with the trade. Yeah. Were you surprised by this trade? Did it come out of nowhere, or did you hear rumblings about this?
No, I was surprised by it, Chud. Now, I expected the Browns to add a veteran pass rusher, right? They signed Obo Okoronkwo in free agency, early in free agency, pair him with Myles Garrett. You drafted Isaiah McGuire. You have Alex Wright from last year. So it felt like, to me, it felt like the Browns were kind of one guy short is at defensive end. And I thought they'd be best suited by finding someone with some experience because, you know, Obo's pretty young, at least inexperienced from a defensive end standpoint. I think he started 8 games and they were the last 8 games of last year. Alex Wright's young, Isaiah McGuire's young, Isaiah Thomas is young. So you have Myles Garrett, you have Obo, and I felt like there was a hole there, especially with Jim Schwartz's defense, right? He wants to attack. He wants to base so much of it on getting pressure from your front four, and he likes to rotate a bunch of bodies. So I thought a guy like maybe Melvin Ingram, Justin Houston, Carlos Dunlap, somebody like that who's been experienced in the league, you can sign to like a one-year deal, come in, maybe only play him on third down, but he gives you that pass rush ability and a veteran guy. So I thought that was a need. I didn't necessarily look at Za'Darius Smith, even though I probably should have given the Vikings salary cap situation. But he's just a step above all those guys I mentioned. It's a one-year deal. All you have to do is, you know, it's a swap of draft picks. So the Browns move down from like the fifth round in 24, 25 to the sixth and seventh round. So you move down 3 rounds total to get a guy that's a three-time Pro Bowler. I think it's a really strong move. You know, now it's not perfect situation. There's issues. I think he turns 31 in September. His production fell off last year. Like, it got off to a great start. He had 9.5 sacks in the first 8 weeks, I think, and then only a half sack his final 8 games. He was bothered by a knee bruise. He missed almost all of, I think it was 2021 with a back injury, but he played really well at the start of last year. So, I mean, it's not, you know, there's always issues, right? The teams don't give away great players with no issues, but the biggest issue there was the money. And the Browns are willing to take on most of his salary. I just think it's a really solid move at a premium position. And I think he was better than all those free agent options that I had mentioned.
Yeah, usually when I see something like this, I wonder if it's too good to be true. And I think you kind of just answered it, but I want to dive more into that.
Yeah.
When you get a guy that, you know, has the Pro Bowl experience and, you know, you mentioned 10 sacks last year, I look at it at face value and I think, man, all we had to give up was some fifth round picks. And that seems like too good to be true. Is it because of the money? Is it the age? Is it just those two factors? Is that the main reason why they were able to pull off this deal?
Yeah, I think the number one reason was money. That the Vikings have had to make some salary cap moves. They might even do something with Dalvin Cook. There's rumblings about that. So they're looking to clear salary cap space. And rather than just cut him, they were, you know, the Browns kind of seized an opportunity to trade for him. Rather than letting him get to the free agent market, right? If the Vikings cut him, then there's other suitors. Maybe there's a bidding war. But if you work out a trade, right, then all you have to do is, and the Browns renegotiated the contract with him, but then he's kind of your, he's under your purview. Then you can deal with it there as opposed to letting all these other teams in the mix. And I think it helps that the Browns have a good relationship with the Vikings. The GM from Minnesota, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, was here. And he's really close with Andrew Berry. So I think that helps. I would assume that Barry gets honest intel, like, hey, the guy's a good guy to have on your in your locker room, or at least he's not a bad guy to have in your locker room. You know, yes, the knee injury slowed him down yet last year. We don't think he's done, right? I assume those kind of honest conversations happen. But, yeah, I think it's about money. I think it's about age. And, you know, the fact that his production did fall off the second half of last season, I'm sure is a bit of a concern for the Vikings when they're making tough decisions, right? Who do you keep? Who do you not keep? Who do you spend your salary cap dollars on? I would think that would be a factor. This trade reminds me a lot, Chud, of the one for Amari Cooper in March of 2022 when Dallas didn't want to pay $20 million for Cooper. They felt like CeeDee Lamb was stepping up at the receiver position. They felt like they had other guys, and the Browns got him for fifth-round draft pick. So if you're in a salary cap spot situation and you have an owner willing to spend cash, then you can find these type of deals. And I think that's one area that Andrew Berry has shown to be good at, especially that Cooper trade. I thought that Cooper trade was a steal. Now, you have to pay him $20 million. Yes, that's an issue. But if you have the cap space, if you have the money, you can go get quality veterans. And I think Za'Darius Smith is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, it's not our money. So
exactly. Right? Yeah. Now, eventually it's going to catch up to your salary cap space-wise, right? And there will be a reckoning. I know it keeps going up, and we can talk about whether or not the salary cap is fake. But there will probably come a day where the Browns will have to cut guys that they don't want to cut because of the salary cap, right? And maybe a year where they have to reset as a franchise, right? And maybe they lower expectations. You have to have a bunch of young guys succeed. But the Browns are not there yet. And right now, in win mode, and I think that's another win now mode, I think that's another important thing to mention. This feels like a sense of urgency kind of move, right? The Browns aren't at the salary cap reckoning yet. So why not go add somebody that's going to in the premium position? I can't stress that enough. The Browns really value defensive end like they should. And this guy boosts that. He's a great compliment for Myles Garrett. You have him and Obo and Myles Garrett. And then, you know, Za'Darius Smith can also rush from the inside. So when you go with that kind of speed package, Obo on one side, Garrett on the other, you can rush Smith from the inside. I think he's got a lot of value there.
Yeah.
It's a quality. I think it's a quality move at a time when, you know, it feels like the roster is mostly set, right? That this is a big boost. And I don't know if I certainly wasn't expecting it. I don't know if a lot of people were expecting this kind of addition at this point in the offseason, right? This feels more like a May move, a March move. And for it to happen in May, I think is a bonus for the Browns.
Yeah, that goes back to my original question. I was kind of surprised by it. So you mentioned the roster. Is it set now? It will be anything else?
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Berry would tell you, right, it's never set. To me, there's two areas to watch. Linebacker, and so much of that is the health of the guys coming off season-ending injuries. Anthony Walker Jr., Sione Takitaki, Jacob Phillips. If those guys, you pair one or two of those guys with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, then I think they're set at linebacker. They're probably only, you know, they probably won't be in the base defense very often. So you're playing one or two linebackers. But you need some help there. So I'd keep an eye on that position. Maybe they add just some depth. And then running back. What do they do at that third running back spot? You know, right now it's Nick Chubb and Jerome Ford. They have John Kelly Jr. They have a couple other guys, you know, unknowns. I kind of feel like they might see how it plays out, and then you get to training camp and maybe you add a veteran then, or if there's an injury during the season. Like, that to me feels like a position where you can always go kind of add a veteran. You know, you see it, other teams do it during the season. Guys kind of stay in shape, and they can come in and contribute right away. So maybe we'll see a running back. Maybe we'll see a linebacker. But I would say overall, I think the roster is pretty set.
How about let's talk some rookies now. What do we have? One player left that is unsigned. Cedric Tillman inked his rookie deal. Is that where we stand? Just one left?
Yeah, it's 6 out of 7. DeJuan Jones, the tackle from Ohio State, is the only guy unsigned. And, you know, this – it used to be such a big deal, right? You'd have rookie holdouts. Now it's just not because everybody's kind of slotted. You know, you can quibble over little things, but a fourth-round pick is not going to hold out. So, I would – you know, so that's that's going to happen. Now, what's interesting is, you know, DeJuan Jones, to me, was the story of rookie minicamp, Judd. And, you know, he's an Ohio State guy. You know, maybe he was going to be a first-round pick or late first-round pick, second-round pick. He winds up sliding to the fourth round. Bunch of theories out there. You know, there's a report that he's telling NFL teams that he'd rather be an NBA player than an NFL player. He says he denies that, or he does deny that. You know, he at the Senior Bowl, he practiced one day and then was done. He said he told me that he was diagnosed with a concussion, and that's why he left the Senior Bowl. Now, maybe he didn't. Maybe that wasn't communicated well enough from him or his agent, because that seemed like a kind of mark against him throughout the pre-draft season. And then he didn't work out at Ohio State's pro day. Again, he didn't weigh in, didn't work out. People thought maybe he had his weight had ballooned. He said that he was dealing with a toe injury, and he'll probably have to get fitted for orthotics. So, you know, there's some, you know, there's just enough uncertainty there that I think it scared some teams and it forced him or caused him to slide in the draft. But, you know, the guy's 6'8", he's at least, you know, he's 370-ish at least. But he has good feet. He's got those basketball skills, the movement skills. But it was funny, Chud, you know, you're watching rookie minicamp and you've seen, you know, you've been out at rookie minicamps. They practice for like an hour and a half, you know, an hour and 15 minutes. You know, there's like 30 guys on the field, maybe. And so I'm watching DeJuan Jones because we're going to write about him. We just talked about him. We're going to write about him. And I look over, and he's kind of on a knee, and he's talking to a trainer. And we're not that far into practice, right? And he's just been doing drills with Bill Callahan. And he's on a knee. He's talking to a trainer. All of a sudden, he gets up, starts walking to the next drill, and just throws up. So, right, I'm like, oh, and I'm, you know, I'm kind of far away, but I can see it happening. So then I'm focused on him the rest of the day, right? And he gets back into practice, but he's, you know, between his reps, he's grabbing his shorts. He just looked like a guy that was out of gas, right? And probably out of shape. And I think I would attribute that. And I think he would, I didn't talk to him after that practice. We talked to him before the practice. I think he'd attribute it to the fact that he wasn't able to work out as much, probably because of the concussion. And then the toe, the draft process is busy right now. It's I'm not saying it's a great sign. And then the next day he looked better. You know, I mean, you still bent over sometimes. But, you know, it was just interesting. You know, you're watching this guy. It's like a welcome to the NFL moment. It's like, man, these guys are, you know, it's a tough, you know, it's an hour practice, but they're putting through the paces. And he just wasn't quite ready for it.
Yeah. So that was this past weekend, rookie mini camp. How many days did you get to go out there?
We were there Friday, Saturday. So we watched two practices. The second day, I focused more on the defensive line, right? They had Siaki Ika and then Isaiah McGuire. And, you know, McGuire's role probably or does diminish given the trade for Smith, right? I thought McGuire might come in and have, you know, compete for that third end spot, and now he's competing for that fourth end spot. But it's still interesting to watch. He got a lot of size, and just one nugget that I picked up from watching Chud. And you can see Ika fire off the ball, right? He's a big dude. We got to see if it translates. You know, he's whatever, he's 350, 340. And he wears his shirt, kind of wears that half shirt, so you can just see that big gut. Yeah, he's not afraid of showing off the big gut, but he can move. Like, you do see some burst. Now we need to see it translate to the NFL and show up, you know, consistently. But then McGuire won some rep. They did a drill where it was the first guy to fire off the ball and hit the tackling dummy. So he wins it. Then he does a cartwheel and a round off, like perfect form. The guy's like 6'5", the guy's like 6'5", 270, right? So that shows you just some athleticism that you need to get around the corner on top of the power and size that he brings.
Yeah. So bring us up to date. What's next? OTAs, and then just kind of let everyone fill everyone in on the upcoming schedule here that leads up to training camp.
Yeah. So we go OTAs start next week, right? So this is kind of the last week of the phase, I don't know, I think it's phase three. And they start on April 17th. They do the just classroom and conditioning. And then they go to the field. But it's not offense versus defense. It's just you kind of, you know, it's almost glorified walkthroughs, individual drills. And that's why Kevin Stefanski didn't have a problem with Deshaun Watson taking, you know, about a dozen guys to Puerto Rico this week, because it's kind of a lull in the offseason program before OTAs next week. So next week they have OTAs. I think it's 3 days. We're out. The media's out there Wednesday. Same for the following week. And then mandatory minicamp is June 6th through 8th. And then it ends a week early. They have one less week of OTAs because of the early preseason start. So they have an extra week of training camp. So June 8th will be their last day in town. And then they're gone until, you know, June 21st, June 22nd is when training camp starts. That will start, like we talked about, at the Greenbrier in West Virginia before they come home like July 30th to finish preparations for that Hall of Fame game. Training camp, it'll be, I think they're going to be in Greenbrier from the 22nd to the 30th, then home back in Berea starting either 31st or April 1st or August 1st. And they haven't announced the full schedule yet, but they'll have practices in Berea for the fans. And then they go to the first two preseason games are here. The first one's in Canton versus Jets. Then it's the Commanders at home. And then they go to Philly, and they'll practice for a couple days in Philly against the Eagles in advance of that preseason game. And then the preseason finale is versus the Chiefs. They just announced all those the times and dates for the preseason games. So it's August 3rd. It's a Thursday. August 11th, it's a Friday. That's the Canton and the Cleveland games. Then Thursday, August 17th at Philly. Saturday, August 26th at 1 o'clock at Kansas City. And that's the preseason.
All right, yeah. So they end up with the Chiefs there. Yeah. Anything else you want to get to before we hit the schedule?
I don't think so, Chuck. I think we covered it.
All right, let's get into the schedule now. Obviously, we're a little behind on this. Would have liked to have talked about it when it came out, but here we are now to break it down. And I think people always like to talk about the schedule, right? I mean, there's something, you know, you visually see now. You knew who the opponents were going to be, but now you know what order they're going to be, the primetime games. So let's start out. What is the first thing that hits you? I mean, the first things for me are I'm always looking at the primetime games, right? And there's that. But how about, you know, three out of your first four games against the division? That's pretty brutal.
To me, that's a headliner, Chud. It's that and a combination of the start at home. Four of the first five are at home. So you combine those together, and to me it just means you got to start fast if you're the Browns. And we talked about that last year, right? That was the theme last year. And it was because the schedule was soft at the beginning and Deshaun Watson was suspended, right? And you felt like, okay, the Browns need to go 3-1 or 4-0, and then they go 2-2, and they really could use an extra win or two, right? As the season went along, you just kept pointing back to the loss of the Jets and the loss of the Falcons, like missed opportunities that really would have helped in a potential playoff push. This year, the circumstances are different, but I think the importance of a fast start is just as great, if not even more so, because like you mentioned it, you play each of the division rivals within the first 4 weeks. So you have a chance to establish yourself as an AFC North contender. And if, let's say you go 3-0, right? Then you're leading the division. If you're 2-1, you're probably leading the division. And that's a great way to start. It builds so much confidence, I think, and momentum for a team that there's questions about, right? We talked about how good the roster is and so many other things. But I think there's doubts about this team. And I think there's legitimate and serious doubts, you know, maybe more so from the outside. You know, you look at the power rankings and, you know, Deshaun Watson, where he fits in the AFC hierarchy of quarterbacks, and those are unknowns. And I think if you start out and go 2-1 in the division, let's say, or 2-1 or 3-0, I think all of a sudden you feel way more confident as a team. I think you can build momentum, and then you're heading to the meat of the schedule, and I think you have a kickstart. And on top of that is two of those games are at home, right? It's Cincinnati, then at Pittsburgh on a Monday night, home for Tennessee, home for Baltimore. So, and then it's bye week, home for San Francisco. So you're supposed to be good at home, right? The Browns are supposed to have a home field advantage. You need to take advantage of that. And if four of your first five games are at home, you know, I think that's a perfect chance to start like 4-1. Or, you know, at least 3-2. And if you fail to take advantage of that opportunity, I think it feels like you're fighting uphill the rest of the season.
If they start 4-1, six pack on me for you. Okay.
I'm not calling that, but you know what I'm saying, yeah. Chud? Like, if you're playing four games at home, right? Don't you think you should win three of those games at home? If you're a good team, right? Like, if you're a playoff worthy team and you're playing four games at home, you should go 3-1 at home.
Well, yes, you know? But it's, you know, look at who they're playing, though. I mean, this is not easy. The Bengals, Ravens, and 49ers at home, three of them. And then Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. That's a pretty tough start, man.
Well, it is. I'm not going to argue with you, but that's why I think it's so important, right? Because it's tough, but you're facing your division foe, so that's the best time to make a mark in the division. And the games are at home. Like, for me, when I look at the schedule, whether it's this year or any year, it's, okay, can you beat these teams at home, right? And then do you go on the road, and are there easier games on the road, right? Do you get a break by playing, like, for example, the Browns are at Indianapolis week 7. Like, that feels like a game they should be able to win on the road, right? So you want your weak opponents on the road. I think you want your strong opponents, and I was playing golf with a guy yesterday that had this theory, right? You want your weak opponents on the road, your strong opponents at home, because you have a better chance to beat them at home. And I feel like that's how this sets up. Now, there's no, like, grace period. The Browns, they can't ease into the season. They got to go out and play really well right away. And Deshaun Watson has to be ready to go way better than he was at the end of last season. The chemistry with his receivers has to be way better, and that has to be immediate. But there is a chance, given the home games and given the schedule, to make a statement early, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, and number one, I'm not surprised you were golfing yesterday. Sure. But number two, couldn't the argument back to your buddy who you're golfing with could be, all right, well, the weak team's on the road. You know, if you had them at home, that gives you even more of an advantage. Whereas if you're playing the weak teams on the road, you know, that they have the advantage of home field.
Yeah, yes, but I think the point is that you need to beat some tough teams somewhere, right?
And true.
And the odds of that are better at home, right? Like, if the Browns were at San Francisco, I mean, maybe they're a 6.5-point – I'm just throwing numbers out. Maybe they're a 6.5-point dog. Where at home, maybe they're a 2-point dog, right? Like, we know how that swings. And I think I think the home field advantage has been lessened as the years go by, but I think it's still important. It still affects point spread. There's no doubt about that. So, you know, maybe from saying, okay, that would be a guaranteed loss, let's say at San Francisco or, you know, even at Baltimore or whatever, right? Versus, okay, now there's a chance the Browns can win. And Indy, yeah, maybe it's a guaranteed win at home, but it's still a probable win on the road. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's why it sets up. I just think, to me, the bottom line is it just puts so much pressure on this early start.
Yeah, I agree, and I think you win that debate, but I'm here to just throw out the other options, right? I mean, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't make you think a little. But
right.
But how about the early bye? I did see a quote from Stefanski saying that they liked that, and I don't know if that's just, you know, hey, I got to say that. I would think you'd want the bye to be a little bit later, but that's just me. I don't know.
That's I don't believe him for a second when he says that. Because I think he said early. I think we've talked about this with him before, and you want it like middle of the season. I think that's ideal. And if you think you're going to make a playoff run, you might want to push it back a little, right? So, let's say ideally would be week 9, but maybe you want week 10 or 11 if you think you're going to go on a long playoff, right? Like, that makes more sense. I mean, it's the Browns, their bye week's week 5, right? So it's October, like the first week in October, right? They play October 1st, and then they're on a bye. So the weekend would be October 8th. So the season doesn't end until January 8th, right? So that's three straight weeks or three straight months of right? That's three straight months of playing football. Or they don't know exactly what date it is, but it's that week of January. So it's three straight months without a break. And then you might, if you get on a run, it's another month of the playoffs, right? It's a long time to go when your break is coming after 1 month of the season. So I think he just says that because you want to be optimistic. You don't want to plant seeds of, man, this stinks. But
yeah,
you'd much rather have the bye later in the season. I don't think there's any question about that.
What do you think is the easiest stretch in the schedule? What's the most difficult?
Yeah, that's a good question, Chud. You know, they go – there's not like a crazy easy stretch. They go to Indianapolis – in week 7, then they go at Seattle week 8, and that's a tough game to play, right? Then they come home for Arizona. So, like, I like them versus Indy. I like them versus Arizona. Seattle's going to be a tough game. So it's 2 out of 3, kind of easy stretch, and they go to Baltimore. And then they got Pittsburgh at home. Then they go at Denver, at L.A. Rams. Those are probably two winnable games on the road. They're going to stay there. They hope to stay out west between those two games. To cut back on the travel. And then they're home for Jacksonville, home for Chicago, at Houston. So right there, I would say that that's the run, because you should beat Houston. You should beat the Bears. Jacksonville's at home. They're a good team, but they're at home. And then it's at Rams, at Denver. So those feel like a handful of winnable games, even though you're playing three of them on the road. And then the tough stretch, we talked about at the beginning, and I think the back-to-back, you know, at Baltimore, home versus Pittsburgh, November 12th, November 19th, weeks 10 and 11. You know, usually, lately, the schedule's been backloaded inside the division, and it's not this year. After week 11, the Browns only have one more division game, and it's the finale at Cincinnati. So,
yeah,
if you're going to do anything in the division, it's the start, and then it's those two games in the middle of the season. You're at Baltimore, Pittsburgh, you know, two biggest rivals. That's going to be a key stretch.
Yeah, you're going to have the Ravens, Steelers, and then you got to go on the West Coast, Denver and Rams back-to-back. And, you know, you're not talking about – I mean, the Broncos aren't the most powerful team in the NFL, but anytime you go on the West Coast, it's a tough place to play. And then you come right back and you have the Jags at home, and that's not a cupcake anymore. So that's a pretty brutal stretch in there that you talk about. Along with the beginning of the schedule. Now, you counter it with them being at home 4 out of 5, so that makes a lot of sense. But just the fact that they have to take the Bengals and Steelers on right away to start the season. But I tend to agree with you on that Cardinals-Colts area. And then, we'll see at the end of the year. I mean, the thing about it is at the end of the year, you just have no idea how that's what makes this funny. And we all love to play the schedule game and talk about it, but you know, we say this all the time. You don't really know how that back end of the schedule or even middle is going to look until, I mean, you really see how these teams are. I mean, you're basing it on the year before, not necessarily what the teams are right now. I mean, the Rams are a prime example. You go from winning the Super Bowl to not even making the playoffs, right?
Oh, that's exactly right. I mean, you don't know how teams are going to be. You don't know how injuries are going to work out, right? You know, if a quarterback's hurt, obviously that makes all the difference. How your injuries are going to work. So, yeah, I mean, you can make general assumptions, but you can't forecast, especially, I mean, I don't know if you can forecast week one, right? We don't know exactly what Cincinnati's going to look like, how Cleveland's going to look. But you certainly can't forecast late in the season how things are going to look. I mean, I think Denver's a winnable game, but Russell Wilson could go back to playing like an MVP, and they have Sean Payton as a coach now, right? That's going to make – you would think that would make a huge difference. So you're 100% right, Chuck.
How many prime time games did you think they'd have? I think basically I went in thinking it could be anywhere from 0-2. I didn't think it would really be zero, but now the NFL does have that rule. Like, you used to have to have a Thursday night game, but that's not the case anymore. There's some teams that don't have primetime games. I think Arizona, Indianapolis, and there might be one or two more don't have primetime games. Where did you think they were going to be? I think two is right around. I thought that was, I wouldn't have been surprised if it was one. Probably three or more would have surprised me. I think two is kind of right in there.
Yeah, I would have said two, Judd. I feel like, you know, the Browns are a pretty good draw, right? We know the rabid fan base. I think there's somewhat of a national following, and they're a talented team, right? So they're not nearly on the level of intrigue as the Jets with Aaron Rodgers and, you know, the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes and the Bills with Josh Allen, and we can go down the list. But I think there is still intrigue there. To me, they're not an afterthought in the league, like a team like the Texans or, you know, you mentioned Indianapolis or Arizona, right? Like, to me, those teams feel like, especially Arizona and Houston, feel like afterthoughts. And I don't think the Browns are there by any stretch, even though they have been in the past. I don't think they're there. I think they have realistic playoff expectations. So two made sense to me. And we do have to remember that some of these games, you know, can be flexed. Way more of these games can be flexed to primetime now than they used to be. I think it starts week five. So the Browns get off to a great start. If they're in contention, you know, could week 18 be flexed to a primetime game? Sure. If it meant, you know, if it was for the AFC North title or even a playoff spot. Could at Baltimore in week 10 be flexed to a Sunday night game or a Monday night? Because I think now Monday night games are eligible for flexing. I think that's entirely possible, just depending on how the beginning of the year goes.
I hate to even ask this, and I don't necessarily want to do it. We can do this a couple pods from now.
Yeah.
Did you go down and do win-loss? Did you play the schedule game?
I did not. You know what I did, Chud? And this is going to sound ludicrous. I went through and I kind of said, okay, is this a winnable game, right? So can you beat Cincinnati at home? Yeah, they've done that before. Can you beat Kenny Pickett on the road? Yes, you could do that. Can you beat Tennessee? Yeah. Can you beat Baltimore at home? Sure, it's at home. Can you beat San Francisco? Right. So I kind of did that as I made my way through the schedule, like kind of found a ceiling. And, you know, obviously every game, they could win or lose any game. Like that's just goes without saying. But I kind of went through and I thought, you know, there's a ceiling here where they could go on a run and win 13 games. I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying if you play out like you win all your home games or 8 out of 9 home games, right? And then you go on your road and you steal a few. Like, I think I don't look at the schedule and go, there's a whole lot of games where the Browns have no chance of winning. I guess that's my point. I did not go through and make predictions yet. I think we can do that down the road. But I do think with the talent and the way the schedule sets up, there's a whole lot of games where I expect the Browns to be in the thick of it. Now it's just a matter of, do they make the plays and do they win the games, right? Does Deshaun Watson play well enough? Like, we've been doing this for a long time. A lot of years you go and you go, oh, that's a loss. The Browns are in trouble. They need a bunch of stuff to go the right way. I don't know if I necessarily feel that way heading into this year and heading into the schedule.
There's talk. Oh, and they have an extra home game, right?
Yeah, it's 9-8 just because of the 17 games. Yeah.
Two more things for you on the schedule. Do you think you hear on talk radio, you know, people say, it's the Deshaun Watson factor when it comes to prime time. The NFL doesn't want to showcase him. Do you buy into that or no?
I do. Now I don't think, let me say this. I think it's a factor. I don't think, you know, if people thought the Browns were going to be an elite team, they would be on TV more than they are now. But I think if you're picking between, let's say, a Browns game and a Jaguars game where Trevor Lawrence is an up-and-coming guy, or a Browns game and a Chargers game and Justin Herbert's as good as Justin Herbert is, I think if I were the league, I would be more inclined to go Jaguars or Chargers, given the messiness, and that's probably not the right word for the gravity of the situation. But the difficulties, the issues surrounding Deshaun Watson's situation, I still think that that plays a factor to some degree, including the fact that there remain two ongoing lawsuits that are unsettled.
Scott, with the NFL schedule overall, was there one thing that stood out to you in the NFL schedule, whether it was, you know, they have that Friday, Black Friday game after Thanksgiving now? Were you surprised by what games they selected on Thanksgiving? Was there anything, because there's one for me that stood out. Was there anything that really stood out to you when you looked at the schedule?
That's interesting, Chud. I'm interested in the Black Friday situation, right? That's another day in the holiday calendar that the NFL is taking over. Not so much who's playing, right? I know the Jets now want to be, like, they want to become the permanent Black Friday team. But just the fact that they're doing that. And then, you know, off the top of my head, I'm going to say the Lions being the opening opponent for the Super Bowl champion Chiefs.
There it is.
All right, good. I'm glad I hit it.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I understand they're kind of the darlings and they have a, you know, they did well, but it's still at the end of the day, and all apologies to Detroit fans, but like usually on Thanksgiving, people are like, they don't want to watch the Lions anymore.
Yeah.
I was shocked that they're putting that much stock in them.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. I think you're right about the darling factor, right? They played well at the end of last year. Dan Campbell is certainly a fascinating coach and I think a draw. They probably built up some level of fan base in with their Hard Knocks appearance last year, right, which was fun to watch. I think all that contributed. The division is too probably winnable now with Aaron Rodgers not there anymore. But it feels like a leap, right? It feels like way more sure things for that week one matchup than the darling line.
Yeah, that was a shock. All right, Scott, well, unless you have anything else, it's time for me to take a nap.
No, I'm good, Chud. Thanks for doing this. You go get some winks. I'm going to work on a little golf things I got going. Not playing. I got some golf stories I'm working on.
Okay.
But thanks for doing this. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.